You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, the industry's under threat on technology and AI, what the market is pricing in terms of interest rates, and a big dividend day, $8 billion paid to investors. We'll have more on that next. Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 25th of September, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market rose by 0.1% to 8,773. We'll have the details with Mark Gardner from MPC Markets in a few moments. But first, to the impact of technology and AI, which economists at Barrenjoey say will trigger the most comprehensive workforce transformation in modern history. It doesn't necessarily mean occupations will be wiped out, though, with change not happening overnight, but many will need to transform or fade over time. To explain, I spoke with Jonathan McManaman, a senior economist at Barrenjoey. Jonathan, first of all, how significant will technology and AI in particular hit the jobs market, and how does it compare with other historic revolutions? I mean, how many jobs will be affected?
It is incredibly significant. This is a general purpose technology. So this is a technology that affects all ways of working. So when we look at the effects of technology, but AI included, we see that only one in 1,000 jobs in the country is exposed to very low levels of technology disruption. And that means that it's very broad-based. It's going to affect the way we do work right across the workplace.
So in your research, what kinds of jobs or industries or skills are most at risk? Why? And have you noticed a theme?
Yeah, so we split the effect of technology and AIs included in that into two groups. One being the substitutable tasks or skills that technology can play a role in substituting for, and those tasks and skills that are augmentable. So things that technology can help people achieve a better outcome on the task, make them more productive in the way that they do things. So I guess the things that are most substitutable are those things that are very routine. These are tasks and skills that we've been replacing for a long period of time, the long history of doing that. And technology is very well suited at replacing routine tasks. So we're expecting to see that occur continuously through time. The augmentable group of things are things now that are less routine and often cognitive. So these are tasks or areas of the workplace that haven't typically been disrupted by technology in the past. So you can think now professionals are more exposed to technology, whereas previously it was machine operators and labourers and clerical people, and now it's moving into a newer group.
So run us through some of those industries that are affected and the specific skills within there.
Yeah, sure. So when we take a look at combining all of the tasks into their occupations and then translating those occupations onto industries, we find that you kind of get three major groupings of industries. First is that set of industries that are exposed to highly substitutable tasks. So there's a concentration of industry of tasks within that industry that are most likely to be substituted. Think more retail in this space, right? They stand out for very routine tasks that can be substituted. Then you have the highly augmentable group of occupations or industries. And this is really in that software, IT, healthcare technology space, where you have a high concentration of professionals, which are unlikely to be directly substituted, but their productivity can be much further enhanced. And then you have a third group, which is a group that has a mix of both of these things. So you can think of these industries as things like banks or insurance companies, where they have a mix of people with highly substitutable tasks, maybe lower skilled roles that are more clerical in nature. And then you also have a high portion of professionals, where those jobs will be augmented by the technology, just like in software or healthcare technology.
Have you done any research as to perhaps, and I mean, we all love numbers, right, to quantify it, as to how many jobs will be affected by this, how many may go? And a second part of that question, how soon will these changes happen? Is it something that's going to happen immediately or does it come over time?
This is one of the greatest questions that we all have and one that we get constantly asked. Unfortunately, it's one that you can't put an exact number on. And I think we've specifically chosen not to do that. What we can tell you, though, is that there is about one in two jobs in the economy that have a medium to high augmentation exposure. And there's one in three that have a medium to high substitution exposure. So that means that we're more geared towards augmentation than we are towards substitution. So we think that the threat to the workforce isn't through a mass unemployment phase. This isn't a doomsday piece of research that you might have seen in some other instances, but it's a more balanced outcome that we're expecting for the workforce.
So for the workforce, right, what do you think the message is for them?
The message is you have to adapt. You have to upskill, you have to go all in on the technology. This is a general purpose technology, one that will change the way that we work across the workforce, just like when computers came in or when the internet was invented, right? It changed the way our economy operated. We went from brick and mortar banks to online banking, and that completely changed the way we interact with the services around us. This will do the same. It's still in its very early days. Right? Right now, we're just using it as basically a calculator. We're chatting to this AI, asking it to do 1 + 2 = 1 + 2 = 3 in this case. But really, where the power of the technology will come in is when we have add-ons to the technology. So, like when the internet came on, we got new web pages, we got new apps, we got the App Store, we got iPhones, and all of these things happened in progression over time. The same thing will happen with this technology. You'll get add-ons, which will disrupt the way we do over time.
Talking realistically here, where you spoke earlier about there being one in three jobs, I think you said were substitutable, but one in two were augmentable. The reality is that jobs will go, I mean, net will be down.
Yeah, so typically what history has told us is that you have adaptation over devastation. Right. So what will happen is those substitutable occupations, they will either completely transform in terms of what they look like, or you'll see their role in the workforce just fade over time. It won't be an immediate overnight thing, but they will fade. The best example I have in this space is typists. There's still 50,000 typists in Australia, and yet there is the technology to completely replace that occupation. Right, we have video recording, we have transcripts. There's still things like regulation, old systems, and just general mistrust of technology that exists, which requires a typist to still be in place, say in the courtroom, for example. So I think the realistic thing to keep in mind here is that we're all human beings, and while the technology is capable of so much potentially, ultimately, human beings will slow that down through culture, through our regulation, through our trust, and through the cost of the technology itself, which is very high.
So, can you offer any other type of examples?
Yeah, so we have a really good example in the professional kitchen environment. Back in the 1990s, there used to be more cooks than there are chefs. There were chefs. So that meant that a chef would have a number of cooks working for them. But over time, we've seen an increase in technology. This is convection ovens, sous vide machines, POS systems that have basically increased the productivity of a chef to the point where they don't need as many cooks, right? And so what we've seen is the role of a cook in a kitchen fade. So the lower skilled worker isn't really needed within that restaurant. But what's happened instead is there's been an increase in demand for chefs. So now there are three chefs per one cook in every kitchen now. So there is an increased focus on the higher paid, higher skilled version of that occupation. And this has been supported by the fact that all around them, around this professional kitchen, the economy has gotten richer. And as the economy has gotten richer, they have demanded a higher quality service and a higher quality product, which has led to an increased demand for chefs. So now we can see chefs per capita have continued to rise since the 1990s and are at the highest levels they've ever been. So this is an example of what could happen to all occupations across the occupation spectrum, is you have less demand for the lower skilled occupation and more demand for the more productive part of that industry.
You are listening to my interview with Jonathan McMenamin, a senior economist at Barrenjoey, about the impact AI and technology will have on jobs. I also asked him what this means for investors.
There's lots of opportunities. There's opportunities in the industries where they are further behind in the technological progress. So this is a great example of this is in insurance, where there hasn't been a whole lot of investment in upgrading the software and the technology behind the industry. And as a result, you still have a lot of lower skilled roles required in that industry. Those industries can benefit from new technologies which can advance the technology. The question for investors, though, is all of the benefit of this increased productivity going to go to the workers who might start to get paid more? They're going to go further up the skill levels, right, as they get paid more. Is it going to go towards the consumer who might get lower premiums in the insurance example if the cost of insurance goes down? Or is it going to go to the shareholder? And that's the primary question. The other party in all this is the software company, right, who will also benefit significantly. So that is the real question mark for investors, and it will be different to every single industry.
Final question, and you know, I love real world examples, right? How do you personally feel about the impact of technology and AI on your job as an economist, right?
Yeah, so it is a really good question. I'm using it as much as I can now. I've gone all in to the extent that I can. For me, it's probably a little late. For the next generation of economists, that's where the question marks hang, I think. When you think about the need for a 20 cohort grad cohort, you might not need 20 grads, right? You might need 15 in this example, where the productivity of those grads is uplifted so significantly by the AI. The counter to that, though, and so we're always evenly handed as economists, is that the youngest generation is probably the generation most likely to use this technology to its full potential. So you can't completely get rid of new graduates and new entrants, because ultimately that's really where we think the productivity enhancement will come from.
That's Jonathan McMenamin there, senior economist at Barrenjoey. From AI, let's go to the share market, where the S&P ASX 200 rose today, but only just by 0.1% to 8,773. More sectors ended lower than higher. Energy and materials, the best, the worst, consumer staples and healthcare. Of the better performing stocks, they were those miners, Capstone, for example, up by about 10%, Sandfire Resources 7.5% stronger. Also, the likes of Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton, both up by more than 3.5% today. To tell us more about that and the rest of today's market action, I spoke with Mark Gardner, the CEO of MPC Markets. Mark, first of all, it would appear the market and many economists are now reconsidering the potential for further interest rate cuts from the Reserve Bank following yesterday's stronger than expected monthly inflation numbers. How significantly has market pricing changed? Why? And does it affect the outlook for equities?
Look, I think there's been a couple of the larger investment houses have definitely changed their views. Some have shifted to no more rate cuts this year. I think that's more headline grabbing than it is reality. I think central banks will be far more sensitive to what appears to be a weakening labour market, both here in the US, and despite the fact they've got to juggle inflation and the employment market or the labour market. I think with the increasing public pressure, politicising of central banks, you know, globally, and the amount of pressure that now publicly gets put on them by the media, et cetera, I think they're more likely to respond to a weakening in the labour market and leave inflation for later, despite the fact that, you know, they probably, you know, inflation from a long-term perspective is what they should be dealing with first. However, you know, we are in an age where, particularly in the last few years, where, you know, those central banks have not lost their independence, but they are certainly far more subject to public pressure and media pressure, etc. So I would say that we've still probably got at least one cut coming. US jobs market had a very significant revision of down 911,000 jobs for last year on their non-farm payrolls numbers. That's the largest revision in history, larger than COVID, larger than the GFC. It didn't get a lot of airtime due to the fact that Trump stealing the headlines and Oracle's results came out about an hour later. But that's a very significant shift in the labour market over there. And I think it's been underestimated that we've had our first negative payrolls number in the US since December 2020 based on revisions. And then we're likely to see further jobs being lost in the coming payrolls next Friday. So I think we will still get a couple of rate cuts in the States for the rest of the year, possibly more, but in 2026. And I think we will tend to follow the US on about a 6 to 9 month delay.
Okay. There's not a lot of news coming out of the markets today, but there is something that's pretty interesting. So we're seeing BHP and Rio having a really fantastic day. It's also on a day when they're both depositing huge amounts of dividends onto bank accounts of shareholders. And in fact, it's a big day for dividends overall. I think there's about $8 billion worth of being delivered to shareholders today, including the likes of Telstra, the lottery group too. But just how attractive are dividends at the moment?
Dividends from a historical perspective are quite low at the moment. The multiples are quite high. We're sitting at record highs, and valuations, particularly when you look at the big four banks, etc., dividend yields are at the lowest point they've been at in quite some time. So while $8 billion sounds like a lot of money, if you go back a couple of years, the actual dividend yield was probably at least 40, 50% higher. So, but I think Rio and BHP were obviously dividend reinvestment schemes would be going back into the market today. But Rio and BHP have been buoyed today by the fact that Freeport-McMoRan, which is it sort of ships between first and second biggest copper producer in the world, had an incident on September the 8th in Indonesia at one of their mines where they had a major mudslide. And that is that mine is actually 3% of the world's total supply. So it's gone force majeure on the contracts it was going to deliver, which means it won't be delivering those contracts. And that mine's not looking to be reopened deep into 2026. So if you add up the green shoots of a Chinese property recovery and the rapid expansion of AI data centers at the moment, which both have huge demands on copper for wiring, et cetera, then it's a very bad time for 3% of the world's copper supply to go missing. And, you know, there's also some gold supply in there as well. But you're seeing structural supply deficits in copper before this, as most of the major mines in the world or the biggest mines in the world are coming to end of mine life. So I think the rally in copper will continue, which means that BHP and Rio should head higher as well as they start to look at the, a bit of a supply squeeze.
Just to wrap up, what are you telling your clients right now? Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
So we're very stuck on our high conviction thematics essentially, and anything outside of that we're largely selling. September usually is a week is subject to seasonal weakness. October as well. We've had a fair bit of froth in the AI companies and the Mag 7 in the US. So that's largely kept valuations quite high, but there's such a large concentration and weighting in those in the indexes that it's hiding the fact that the rest of the market's not doing particularly well. We're sticking to that rapid expansion of data centers and defense stocks as well, because we've obviously seen Trump trying to make NATO and the European nations pay more for NATO, so European-based defense contractors, and also gold, silver, and copper. Gold and silver, just due to that spiraling US debt. I think those stores of value will continue to do well. And for those who are, you know, interested in the new age stores of value. Bitcoin should benefit from that as well, as it's largely considered as a store of value as well. But I don't see those turning around anytime soon. And we're having the second best year, I think, in gold, essentially in history. And silver's lagging. The gold-silver ratio normally sits at around about the 50 mark, which would put silver prices about 45% higher from here at around about $60. So I think that precious metals thematic will probably continue to play out, but more so in silver and platinum than it will gold. The gold miners are probably the best value here in the market at the moment.
It's Mark Gardner there from MPC Markets, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. If you enjoy it, give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and click subscribe.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.